Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And hello today to you, the listener. I am your host, Jim Werbel, and today's show focuses on international exchange opportunities in Ames, a chance for people-to-people contact as a means to create global change. We listen to stories today from Del Christensen, the executive director of IRIS, and Joan Herwig, an officer in the Ames chapter of Ames Friendship Force. We also have Susan Guiazda in the studio for her monthly update of the City of Ames sponsored events. She has a lot of information to share with us. To start the show, I am very pleased to have Del Christensen of IRIS on the show. IRIS is an international exchange program that brings international visitors to Ames. I'd like to welcome Del Christensen to the show, who's the executive director of IRIS. What exactly does IRIS stand for, Del? Yeah.
It stands for Iowa Resource for International Service. It was founded back in 1992 by former Lieutenant Governor of Iowa, Bob Anderson,
mm-hmm.
and originally was a program focused on journalism and specifically journalists from former Soviet states and the role that media can play in emerging democracies. But we kind of grew into other international arenas and came up with the new name of IRIS, which was originally just supposed to represent Iris the flower as a symbol of peace and the Greek god Iris as a messenger from the heavens. But every time we'd answer the phone, everybody asked, what does Iris stand for? So we had to come up with an acronym for it. So Iowa Resource for International Service seemed to work well.
How long have you been working with Iris?
First came to Iris in 2002, made my first trip to West Africa on a program with them in 2002, and never looked back from there. I've been with them since that point, and in 2007 became the executive director.
How did you hear about IRIS? What's your background?
Well, my background is working primarily environmental nonprofit organizations, and there was a group in 2001, an IRIS group that had come to Iowa from Nigeria with a focus on religious diversity and tolerance, and one of the people from that group was interested in tree planting programs possible for West Africa, and a friend connected me with them because they knew of my environmental background, and I got to talking with them, wanted to come and visit them in Nigeria, made that trip, and the rest is history.
Had you ever traveled internationally before?
That was my first international trip aside from just Canada, Mexico, yeah.
How did that trip transform you? Other than you obviously took a different line of work.
Exactly. Oh, it was an eye-opener for me. We landed in Lagos, Nigeria. This was before the airports there were in too good a shape, and they still aren't in great shape. And I thought, so what have I gotten myself into?
Mm-hmm.
But once I met the people and got to know more about the needs in developing countries, there was no way I was going to turn my back on that again.
So tell me exactly what is the current direction that IRIS is taking? What are your strategic goals?
Our mission has always been to connect Iowa and Iowans with communities worldwide. And so we've always looked at how can we bring people from other countries to Iowa and connect them with some of the amazing resources we have in this state, and how can we connect Iowans to those communities as well. And so a lot of our programs have been bringing groups to Iowa. We have in the past brought groups of adults in to learn about renewable energy, and they visited the wind farms that we have here, the solar manufacturing right here on the west side of Ames. Currently, we're working on youth programs. A lot of our youth programs through the Kennedy Luger Youth Exchange and Study Program brings over students from 40 different countries every year, and we place all those students just within the state of Iowa. That's one thing that makes us unique from a lot of the other international exchange organizations that are doing youth programs. Many of them do nationwide placement. We keep them all in Iowa.
The Kennedy Luger program? Tell me a little bit about the Kennedy Luger program.
It's a U.S. State Department program that's focused on youth exchange. It was started back in 2002, and it was a result of some of the discussions after September 11th, 2001. State Department here in the U.S. wanted to look at how they could do a better job of showing young people from around the world, especially young people from countries with prominent Muslim populations, what Western culture and the people in Western society really are like, kind of get beyond some of the propaganda. It's always amazed me, whether it's youth programs or adult programs, when they learn that they're coming to Iowa, their first question is, where is Iowa and how far is it from New York or Los Angeles? Because those are the two places they know of. But once they get here, they just absolutely fall in love with that.
All right. So you do both adult and youth programs. What percentage of your programs are adult and what percentage are youth?
Probably about 90-95% of our programs are youth programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually do one or two adult programs every year. And those programs are really short-term programs. Our youth programs are 10 months in length.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a full academic year that the students are here in a high school setting. And our adult programs are only normally 3 or 4 weeks in length.
There's a lot of different exchange programs all over the United States. How does, other than it being Iowa-specific, how does yours differ from the other programs?
We're one of the few exchange organizations that are strictly working with a grant scholarship program through the State Department. This particular program, they're funded, their travel, their expenses while in the U.S. are funded by the U.S. State Department through that grant, the Youth Exchange and Study Program.
So give me some nations where your visitors come from.
Okay. With the Youth Exchange and Study Program, they come from 40 different countries. A lot of students are coming from the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, India, Yemen, students from North Africa, Egypt, Morocco. We have students from sub-Saharan Africa, Ghana, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, Kenya, Tanzania, also South Africa. We have students that are coming from the Asian Pacific countries, Indonesia, Philippines, Malaysia, just throughout.
That's quite a diverse group of people from all over the world. There's a lot of diversity even within that population.
All coming to Iowa.
And how do you identify students from all over the world to come to Iowa?
Right. There's five different organizations that do recruitment and selection. We're one of those five. The other four organizations are based in Washington, D.C. and New York. So we're the odd duck that sits out in the middle of the country doing this program from a tiny little office in Ames, Iowa.
So you get applications and you get pictures. How do you, from an application and a picture, how do you decide who's going to do best in the U.S.?
We do the selection and recruitment in Nigeria, Tanzania, and South Sudan. And so we will go to those countries. We have people that we've worked with over there that will help to do some of the pre-selection, start to do the recruitment side of it. But then when it gets down to 150 to 200 students, as it's starting around 1,000 students, it gets down to about 150, 200, then we will come in and personally interview students, do an English proficiency exam.
That would be important, I would think.
It takes several days to go through that whole selection process. And typically, depending on the grant, we end up with about 15 to 20 students out of that 150 to 200 that we do a final interview with.
Okay, so that's one component. How do you identify families in Iowa to take these students?
That sometimes can be an even bigger challenge.
Really?
Iowa is some of the most welcoming people in the world, I've found. Asking the question, would you be interested in an instant teenager for 10 months in your home? The answer is usually, well,
for 10 months.
I'm going to have to think about that one.
Uh-huh.
Can I just do it for a week? And that doesn't quite work. But we talk with the schools. We talk with community leaders throughout the state. We've had host families for several years in Colo, Iowa. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a big city that you'll get host families coming forward. So, and the host families range from young families with no children to families with number of children to a grandmother that's wanting to do a little something for their community.
If someone were interested in taking one of these youth from another nation, how would they contact you?
They can always contact us by calling our IRIS office in Ames at 515-292-7103 or checking us out on the website, on our website, www.iris-center.org.
Okay, we'll put those on our website, at least the web link. If anybody is interested, you can get that information. What difficulties do some of the Iowan families have in terms of taking a student from a very different part of the world?
A lot of it is just initial adjustment to cultural changes.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from bringing a kid from sub-Saharan Africa to Iowa, and they're absolutely freezing by early September, and we haven't even gotten much below 80 degrees yet,
mm-hmm.
to helping the students work through homesickness, to just recognizing that a lot of what we do here in Iowa may be completely unfamiliar to them, and a lot of what they do in their countries is completely unfamiliar to our host families here.
Can you give me an example of a few students who have come from another part of the world to the U.S. and how you sensed it's transformed them?
I think one of the ways that is transforming to a number of the students has been the concept of community service and volunteerism. In many of the countries that our students come from, the idea of doing some work in your community without getting paid for it is just unthought of. We've always, from the very beginning of the program, tried to work with the host families and with the students to require a certain amount of community service that they do while they're in the U.S. so they get exposed to that concept. I had a young man who was staying here in Ames, and one of the first years of the program, about 2004, 2005, and one of the community service projects was to go out with one of the service organizations and help clean up along the roadsides.
Okay.
His first response was, "Oh, isn't that what you have prisoners for?"
Mm.
I said, "No, this is what each of us do. We get out there and we volunteer." He did it a couple of times, begrudgingly, as a teenager would to start with. But he got to truly appreciate that whole concept of volunteerism and went back home and not only continued doing volunteer work back home, but convinced an entire group of his peers in his community who had never thought of doing something for no pay to go out and do cleanup around their own community as well. Those types of mindset changing that happens through these programs are amazing. And then some of the ideas that the students pick up just always thrilled me. We had a young lady from Tanzania who had been hosted in Atlantic, Iowa. And one of the things that she noticed while on the program was bookmobiles,
mm-hmm.
and how bookmobiles work in Iowa. And she thought that was such a wonderful idea that when she got back home, she decided that she was going to create some sort of a bookmobile. Well, she is from the Maasai tribe,
mm-hmm.
and a very rural area near Arusha, Tanzania, and mm-hmm. has to travel long distances from village to village. So she came up with her concept of a bookmobile, which is a book basket bicycle library.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would fill her basket on her bicycle up with different books. She would pedal over to a local school. She would deliver those books. And then the books that they had just finished reading, she would put those in her basket, and she traveled to the next school. And she just did that as a continuing circuit.
You have these exchange. Your primary emphasis is with youth, and youth have their challenges, as we all know. You're giving some real good examples. I'm certain there are some that, for whatever reason, do get too homesick. And
oh, yeah. We've been very fortunate. Out of the 30 or more students that we have each year, and we've had over 600 students that have been on the program, I would say we have had to send home four students. out of 600, so our numbers are very small.
Okay, and you support families who do choose to take that, so they are not out there alone. As you said, they were calling you early from diagonal saying that there's problems, and you help them work through those issues.
Yeah, we have staff here in Ames as well as throughout the state that work with the families, that work with the schools. We don't just dump a teenager on your doorstep and say, good luck.
So most of your funding comes from the State Department?
A lot of our larger programs are U.S. State Department funded. Mm-hmm. We do other smaller programs that we're partnering with other organizations and or writing grants through private foundations. I'm working on a project right now partnering with the Rotary Club of Adel, Iowa, and the Rotary District 6000 that's in the southern, it includes Ames, but they are working on a project with Des Moines University to provide training for birthing assistants in northern Nigeria. So we're looking at midwives and mid-level healthcare providers. The grant will bring over a dozen midwives from northern Nigeria to Des Moines University to do training on birthing complications and challenges. Those 12 will take back simulator mannequins that they can then use for training back in Nigeria. The goal there is just to provide more skilled birthing assistants in the villages within northern Nigeria.
Okay. Well, thank you. Seems like you're dedicated to the exchange of knowledge and information across cultures. And,
absolutely.
And appreciate your services and time in terms of IRIS being one way of delivering that valuable resource that can get people to work more effectively with each other.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Dale.
Ide poko ide ke udo wa.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Story City. I've been visiting with Del Christensen of IRIS about international visitors to Iowa. He had some very interesting stories about some of the exchange opportunities that have come to City of Ames. I am your host, Jim Werbel, and our next guest is Joan Herwig, representing the Friendship Force chapter in Ames. She's going to talk about an international exchange program for people who want to have firsthand experiences traveling abroad. I'd like to welcome Joan Herwig to the show, who's here to talk to us about Friendship Force. Joan is a past president and current historian for Friendship Force. Welcome to the show, Joan.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here this morning.
So tell me what Friendship Force is exactly.
Friendship Force is a citizen-to-citizen program that puts people from one space in contact with people from another country, another state, another locality on a one-on-one basis, talking about what's going on in their community, exchanging culture, talking about food, talking about daily routines.
Is this done on Skype?
You know, isn't that an interesting idea? I expect it could be. And that might be the next wave of how we first communicate with the home host where we're going to stay.
What's the process of people getting together in Friendship Force?
Well, there are a number of ways you might begin. It might be your local club, and ours is Friendship Force of Central Iowa, offering an exchange to a specific location, such as going in June of 2016 to the Isle of Wight, and then proceeding from there, being assigned to a particular family, a home host as it is. Another way might be going on the friendshipforce.org website and finding a country where you want to go and hooking up with another club that's going there.
So it's a travel, you travel to other places in the world.
Yes, it's not a travel club. It's more than a travel club. It's a tourist experience, but in a home. And so you sit around the kitchen table or around the fireplace or in the back garden or wherever in a home, and you get acquainted. You get answers to those questions that are burning that you have as a tourist.
So you have a very personal tour guide then when you travel overseas or travel even in the United States, I hear.
That's true. And it's wonderful. I always wonder when I travel, especially abroad, what does the kitchen look like? How does the family organize their day? What is their meal pattern like? Where do the children go to school and what are the hours? And those kinds of questions of daily life.
What's the history of Friendship Force? How did it start?
It has a wonderful history. Wayne Smith in Atlanta, Georgia, had a wonderful idea that we should have a citizen diplomacy kind of opportunity here in the United States and around the world. And don't you know, he contacted Jimmy Carter in March of 1977 at a White House conference for governors. Jimmy Carter announced the formation of Friendship Force International, and the governors were urged to go home and think about this idea and see what they could do. And don't you know that our Governor Robert Ray was one that took up the baton, as it were, and off we went as Iowans to visit in another country. In fact, we have some folks in our club that haven't traveled with us for some years. They traveled in the early years, and international travel is beyond what they want to do now. So they support the local club by being a home host when somebody comes here, or they participate in a club-to-club exchange here in Iowa. We have one in a couple of weeks. The folks from Iowa City, Cedar Rapids are coming. Or perhaps they want to go to a domestic exchange elsewhere in the United States where they can drive to the location.
Where else is the club going to in the near future? Isle of Wight? Any other options in the future?
Well, Isle of Wight is our exchange designated for 2016. As a club member of Friendship Force, I can choose to go on to the friendshipforceinternational.org website, and I can see where else are going in the world, other clubs, and join with them. There's some 70 countries that are options, so there's plenty of choice out there.
Wow. So give me an example of what happens when you go on a Friendship Force trip.
Before you leave, you have a weekly itinerary set out. You've been involved with the decisions of what you're going to do. Often the host club will send a list of opportunities available in their area, and then you select from that. You arrive, you're met at the airport or the train station, as the case may be, and you meet your home host, and you proceed through the week. You can expect that there will be some potlucks. You're probably going to visit the local museum. You're probably going to a place like Ryman Gardens, if they have such an opportunity. You're going to learn about the industry. You're going to learn about the businesses of their area.
It's much more than just visiting the top 10 tourist sites in an area then.
Yes. I end up with images through the eyes of my host, my other travelers with me, the other ambassadors, as it were, as well as my own. So I end up with more than a list of the statues that we've walked by.
Or churches you visited. Or
yes. Steeplechasing, as it were. Yes, you end up with a very personal experience. One that comes to mind is having tea in New Zealand, much like we do tailgating. We had visited a glowworm cave and came out, and it was raining, but it was tea time for those New Zealanders. So they opened up the backs of their cars, and there they produced the tea and the cookies and the treats that we were to have with it.
Is there any truly unusual experiences that you've had as an ambassador, Friendship Force ambassador, in some country that you'd care to share with us?
One that comes to mind was a most unexpected opportunity in Ghana. It involved us going to a rural school. One of the things we do within our local club is we make a contribution individually to a philanthropic group in the city we're visiting. And they had selected this school. We knew it was something special because our hosts were dressed in elaborate clothing, beautiful textiles, head wraps, wonderful flowing gowns. And off we went, and the roads got narrower, and they went from being somewhat paved with ruts to, indeed, not gravel anymore. Now we're on dirt roads. It looks like we're going through pasture. And finally, we arrived at this place. Here were some white tents. Under the tents were some chairs. People were seated in the chairs. We looked around at the buildings, one-story buildings with verandas, and children were lined up and seated as well. I have never felt more American. I've never felt more responsible for my country than I was at that moment. So we got there. We were greeted by the school officials, and we waited for a while. We weren't quite sure why we were waiting. And then finally a pickup truck came over the knoll, and here was the chief of this area. He had on flowing gowns. He was a large man, a huge presence, and his helpers pulled out the huge parasol that covered him as he walked down the slope to our area and greeted us. My goodness, what an experience.
Something you wouldn't experience in Kansas.
I don't think I'm going to experience that in Kansas, no.
Do your hosts always speak English?
No, they don't speak English always. They speak the mother tongue or the primary language of their country. So when you go to Brazil, you're talking with Portuguese speaking people.
Do you speak Portuguese then?
I do not speak Portuguese. Isn't that a shame? But you make do. The next generation often has someone speaking English. So they might bring the child that lives next door in to help translate a little bit. Or perhaps it's a grandchild or whomever. They're not shy about asking folks to do the translating.
So somehow you're never really at a loss for support in terms of trying to get your needs met and questions answered.
That's true. We had just an absolutely wonderful experience in Belém, Brazil, where our home host was desperately trying to tell us something one evening. We couldn't figure it out. And she would point out the window, and we would look out the window, and we couldn't figure out what it was she was trying to convey to us. Lo and behold, she went to her cell phone. She called somebody, put the cell phone to our ear, and the woman spoke to us in English at the other end of that cell phone. What she told us in English was Sandra wanted to go to the grocery store to get a can of condensed milk. And she was going to leave us alone, and she didn't want us to be afraid.
Tell me about hosting experiences, because some, as you said, some people might be more just interested in hosting a family from abroad.
The hosting experience is quite wonderful as well. Okay. Once you're placed, you begin the dialogue. So, Jim, if you were coming to our home, we would have exchanged emails back and forth several times.
Maybe a picture.
Pictures, often. You talk about your family. You talk about your work. You talk about your current interest. You talk about what your plans are when you're coming to the United States as well as to Ames. And then we talk about, you know, our home, how many bathrooms, they'll have their own bedroom. So people are put at ease in what to expect. But sending a picture of what we look like and what our home looks like certainly helps to bridge that gap in understanding before they arrive.
What's expected if you're a host to do? Do you have to schlep people all over town?
That's often part of it. We also have people that are not home hosts that might be a day host. And so they'll come and pick you up. I'm going to use you as my ambassador this morning. And so they'll pick you up and spend the day. So perhaps this is a day we're going out to a local CSA to look at the farm. And then we're maybe going off to one of our area larger farms that are specializing in soybeans and or corn. And then maybe we're going to have lunch at Hickory Park. And then perhaps the afternoon we might stop at the Iowa State, the forest north of town to look at the contrast. We like to bring in the Iowa State and the worldwide impact it has.
If someone were interested in Friendship Forest, how do they get involved with it?
You contact one of us involved with Friendship Forest. You can contact me, Joan Herwig, at, I'll give you my email address, jherwig at iastate.edu.
Thank you.
And the phone number is 515-357-5113.
Sounds like there's a diverse range of activities that people can participate in. There's domestic trips, there's international trips, there's trips that can be done within 10 days, there's trips that maybe take 3 weeks.
Yes.
there's you can host or hostess a group and be an ambassador in many, many different ways.
Yes, you can get involved at the level that you're comfortable with. Sometimes people are just a tad reluctant to go into someone's home and stay. They think it seems intrusive. It seems more intimate than they are, comfortable with.
Who'd want me in their house?
I know. And what am I going to look like in the morning when I come out of that bedroom? But that all works out. And it's the overwhelming positive of it is the interaction itself. And that wins the day in terms of taking the leap to be a home host or to be an ambassador.
We've been talking to Joan Herwick, who is a past president of Friendship Force and current historian, explaining to us what Friendship Force is all about. Would you like to make any final comments, Joan?
We certainly would invite people to give us a call. I would be happy to visit with you about Friendship Force. If there's something we've talked about this morning that isn't quite clear, please call and let's hear the question and let me clarify. And then I can put you in touch with whatever aspect of Friendship Force you might want to be involved with.
Thank you, Joe.
No tempo que é desagrafado. A alma é como jardim. No tempo que é só do fado, a alma é como jardim. Onde as flores dançam de lado, na ventania sem fim. Onde as flores dançam de lado, na ventania sem fim.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio 89.1 FM, serving Ames and Story City. We've been talking about different international exchange opportunities in Ames with people from IRIS and Friendship Force. Our next guest is much more local. I have Susan Guiazda, who is the public relations officer for the City of Ames, to discuss City of Ames-sponsored events in October. As always, good to see you again, Susan.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So what do you have for us today? What's happening in Ames?
Well, October is starting out to be an action-packed month. We always have a lot of activity, and it's great to be able to come here in the mornings to share them with you.
Thank you for coming.
There's almost so much. I feel like I should come every week. But for October, we're going to kick off the month with a wonderful event. It's been a long time in coming, but we will cut a ribbon on the new Roosevelt Park on Sunday, October 4th.
I've seen the building going on. It looks like some interesting things going on.
Yeah, there is a stage shelter area on the south side of the park, and there is a playground on the north side of the park. And just to get everybody situated, Roosevelt Park is located on the former site of Roosevelt School. It is at 9th and Roosevelt. And the Roosevelt was the school building itself was converted into loft-style condominiums. And the green space was deeded to the city by the school district for use as a park.
Mm-hmm.
And that space has been sort of a central gathering place for the residents and neighbors in that area. It's a core neighborhood. The green space was very important. It fills the need of a neighborhood park. And the neighbors played a huge role in making sure that that park got developed.
Wow.
So it's really an exciting event. In fact, the Friends of Roosevelt Park raised tens of thousands of dollars to upgrade the playground equipment and had a hand in picking it out. You may notice if you drive past the park or go visit it that the playground equipment has is sort of symbolic or representative of the old wooden structure.
I remember that old wooden structure.
Yeah, it has great memories for a lot of people. And so the new playground equipment, while it's the modern metal type of playground mm-hmm. equipment, it has sort of turret or roof, peaked roof.
Okay.
Symbols that sort of remind you of the old wooden peaked roofs. And it does really, for those of us with the longer-term memory, It does remind me of the old playground, and it is very cute, and it fits just perfectly in the neighborhood. We're very excited to be cutting the ribbon on that that park.
Any other events happening with ribbon cutting?
Yeah, absolutely. We have Northridge Heights Park. We think that that will come online this fall yet. I don't think we have any other ribbon cuttings, but we have lots of other activities in October. After we finish Sunday with Roosevelt Park, we'll get right to work on Tuesday. October 6th is the annual town budget meeting. That really is the event that sort of is the signal that the budget season has started for the city of Ames. And I know that maybe for some people that doesn't sound very interesting, but learning about where your tax money is going and how the city spends your dollars is really an important thing. The town budget meeting at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, October 6th, is the kickoff to that process.
Tell me about the budget planning process.
Well, it takes several months. Like all cities in Iowa, the city of Ames must have its budget certified to the state by March 15th. So we basically work backwards from that date. In October, we have the town budget meeting, which is an opportunity. It's not a city council meeting. It is a meeting that is directed and facilitated by our finance and budgeting people and our city manager, Steve Shanker. He encourages members of residents, Ames residents, to come and talk about where they would like to see funds directed. And so we get a lot of representatives from different organizations, youth groups, nonprofits, just concerned citizens that are interested in street projects or particular funding for an event or more often a facility.
Can anyone show up?
Absolutely. It is open to anybody. Some people just come and listen. And so what the manager typically does is he tries to keep two lists running, one list of where people would like to see more expenditure and one list of where they would like to see less funding. The less funding list doesn't get filled up very far.
I can understand that. People usually want to spend more money.
Yeah, they don't usually ask us to spend less money. Sometimes they do, but usually they say they've identified a need or want to see continued funding for a particular service. And so we take that input, that sort of kicks off the budgeting process that all gets funneled back to the council so they can see those. See that input, and then the process kind of kicks off. It goes through November, December, in January and February we have budget hearings where each department goes in and over a course of several hours they sort of walk the council through the budget. And of course those are public meetings, and you can watch those on our Channel 12 or see them on our streaming video on cityofames.org. You can watch them there. It's a really long but intricate but interesting process, and if people have an interest in it, they really should take advantage of those opportunities to get involved.
So if you want to initiate spending on a new project or to cut spending on an existing project, you should be at this town meeting on October the 6th. And
yes.
Where is it exactly?
It is at City Hall. It is not a council meeting, but it is in the council chamber, 7 p.m. on Tuesday, October 6th. We understand that doesn't work for everybody. So the manager asks, if you can't make it, send him an email. Send any of us an email, and you can get that information on our website.
Is there a last date to do that?
No, it really isn't. It goes on and on through the budget process. So if you don't think of your idea by October 6th, you still have some time. Just keep forwarding that information. You know, we're always interested in hearing from residents, and this is the start of the budget cycle. It does continue through February until the budget's approved in early March. But if you miss that round, Keep talking to us, because another round will come.
Thank you for sharing that. This is really important.
Sure, it is important. There are other events coming up in October. As you know, I think we talked about last time, Ames is getting quite a reputation as a healthy city.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we were named by USA Today as the healthiest city in the nation. That was a wonderful, wonderful accolade to receive. And keeping in that mindset of being healthy, we have the Healthiest State Walk coming up on Wednesday, October 7th. That is just a couple
Wednesday.
Of days away.
Yeah.
There are several healthy walks scheduled throughout Ames. There's usually a couple on campus. Geographically, there's usually a couple in the east, west, north, and south. But the downtown walk is typically led by our own mayor, Mayor Ann Campbell, who unfortunately can't be there this year. But our Healthiest Ames downtown walk this year will be led by Mayor Pro Tem Matthew Goodman.
Okay.
And so it's a really brisk – the idea of the Healthy Estate Walk is just simply to get out over your lunch hour, take a little stroll around around wherever it is you work, and get active. And so our stroll, our downtown stroll, is 1 kilometer. It's just a couple of blocks around the downtown. We usually get several hundred people that participate. It's a wonderful event. And then we end up at the depot. And the Hy-Vee drugstore downtown has been a partner with us for several years. They provide all the participants with some light refreshments.
There's always people trying to take so many steps each day. This
yes,
is a way to, for you
absolutely.
To increase the number of steps you take each day.
And I can't forget also at the depot, at the end of the walk, we'll have the City of Ames water truck dispensing that great tasting Ames water.
It
after
is.
You've had that long, you know, that little jaunt, you'll want a nice, cool, refreshing glass of water. We have some other things coming up. I know that people are curious about this event. We have Yard Waste Free Days.
Oh, that's always a hot topic.
It is always a very popular topic for our residents. This is the season. I see the leaves are on the ground, and I know that people are doing their yard work. I've started to see the yard waste bags at the curbside. If you don't want to leave bags at the curbside and you need a more efficient way or a less expensive way to dispose of those, we have 4 Yard Waste Free Days scheduled in October, November, and December. And we have been very particular about choosing those days on dates where there are no football games because we understand the traffic concerns. So mark your calendars. The Yard Waste Free Days are held on Saturday, October 24th, Saturday, November 7th, Saturday, November 21st, and Saturday, December 5th.
Do you want to repeat those again?
Absolutely. October 24th, November 7th, November 21st, and December 5th.
And which one is the brush day?
The brush day would be on Saturday, November 7th. So that's the day that you can bring more than leaves, but typically it's leaves, grass clippings. You bring them to Chamness Technology, which is located, which is the same site we've been using for several years. It is in South Ames. Actually, it's just outside of Ames. It is on 530th Avenue, 26107 530th Avenue. Most people recognize it as you drive south on University Boulevard and you get on the gravel and you look for the cars that are there. It's on the west side of the road.
It's about a mile south of Airport Road or so, a little
yeah.
bit more than a mile.
Now, I just remind people that there is construction in that area. University Boulevard is undergoing major expansion. There are the roundabouts being added there, and the road is open. It will always be open. The north-south connection on University has been maintained throughout the construction and will be maintained during these events. You know, again, you are driving through a construction zone, so you need to maybe be a little cautious about it, but it shouldn't be a problem. Everybody should be able to access the Yard Waste site without a problem.
Thank you.
Yeah, those are very popular. And we've gone, you know, we've noticed over the years that we initially would try to have them in October and November, and then we'd be done. And we would get calls at the end of November saying, my leaves are still on the trees.
Yes.
So they really are spread out. It's hard for me to imagine somebody raking up the leaves in early December, but it was very pleasant last year in early December. So it ends up being a really nice final day.
Thank you.
Yeah, some other things going on. So as we work our way through October, we have the fire station open house. That's coming up on Saturday, October 10th. That's a popular event. That's an annual event. It's an opportunity for our firefighters to share safety information. That will be held, again, from 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, October 10th. Fire station number 1 is the fire station located at 13th and Burnett.
That's near...
near the hospital. Some people think of it as being fairly close to Meeker School.
Okay.
It is, you know, it's actually probably one of the oldest fire stations, but it's been around for a long time, and the doors will be open. The equipment will be available for children and adults to look at. Firefighters will be there to answer questions. And this year the theme is Hear the Beep Where You Sleep. And Hear the Beep Where You Sleep is a sort of a tagline that reminds people about smoke detectors,
mm-hmm.
the importance of having smoke detectors located outside bedrooms. It's been shown time and time again that your ability to survive a fire increases dramatically if you have enough smoke detectors in your home. It's that early warning that allows you the opportunity to escape a potentially fatal fire. So you know, if nothing else, this is a reminder to check your smoke detectors, maybe install some new ones.
Keep the battery fresh.
Yeah. And I learned that, you know, smoke detectors actually expire. You can't just keep them forever. Even if you replace the batteries, at some point you have to actually change the components out.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, they actually are not good forever. So if you have a smoke detector that, say, came with your house and you've lived there for more than 10 years, it's time to think about just reinstalling one, buying a new one, putting it in, because they don't last forever.
Well, why don't you tell us about Beggar's Night? That's a
hot time. Well, you know, we do always get a lot of calls about trick-or-treating in Ames. And, of course, Halloween this year falls on a Saturday. It's Saturday, October 31st. That is the official – that is Halloween. And trick-or-treating in Ames will take place the night before. So trick-or-treating in Ames will be on Friday, October 30th, with recommended hours from 5:30 to 7:30.
No. It always bothers me. You know, when I was young, I always trick-or-treated on Halloween. How does the city decide what day to pick?
Well, Jim, there are a lot of purists out there who want to trick-or-treat on Halloween. But there's actually a process that goes into deciding when the safest night for trick-or-treating is. And it's always based on what is safest for children. So early in the season, the mayor consults with our police chief, and they look at the calendar of events in the community, and they determine what is the safest day for children. Now, you're probably aware that this year on Halloween, there is a home Iowa State football game. And when there's a home Iowa State football game, those neighborhoods around the stadium fill up with cars.
Nobody's at home either.
Yeah, nobody's home. Neighborhoods are filled with cars. It's dark. And it's not a good night to mix into that a bunch of children running around in costumes trying to get candy. So we look about – we look at what's the best situation for children. And the mayor has in consultation with the police chief – has designated Friday, October 30th as the official trick-or-treating night in Ames.
Okay, so...
So if you're a purist and you want to trick-or-treat on Halloween, I'm sure that some of our neighborhood communities might offer you that opportunity. So get your costume ready.
Well, thank you for coming and sharing the updates. Anything else you'd like to share finally?
Again, there's always construction going on in Ames, and if you need updates on where that construction's happening, be sure to check our website, cityofames.org/construction.
Any major ones you would care to share with?
We have 5th Street. Some construction's already going on 5th Street right next to City Hall. That's going to extend closer to Grand Avenue. That was a project extension from last year. Last year we went from Duff over to Burnett. This year we're going Burnett to Grand. So that has rerouted some traffic. And also on Ferndale from 24th to 30th Street, you might notice some closings in the next few days.
Thank you for coming, Susan. And I look forward to seeing you again next month to tell us what's happening in November.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Jim.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for this show, Jim Werbel. I started out the show with a conversation with Del Christensen, the executive director of IRIS, with a focus on international exchange bringing high school students to Iowa. Then I talked with Joan Herwig of Friendship Force about international exchange opportunities for those who are beyond their academic studies. Finally, I talked with Susan Guiazda from the City of Ames regarding city-sponsored events in the month of October. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show as well as any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests along with the relevant links to today's stories. That's, again, khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our shows and postings in your news feed. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeese. Thank you, Jonah. Our theme song was backtracked by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other music you heard was from Ritz's CD, Fadu Kervu, with the title Cut, and from Talking Timbuktu with Ali Barka Toure. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as reporter, as I did this past year, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. 2878 or contact us through our website at khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what do make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.